Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey folks, this is episode number 214, and this week we are talking with three current members of the legendary prog rock band Kansas and discussing their new upcoming album, The Absence of Presence, which comes out on June 26th. The Absence of Presence follows up 2016's The Prelude Implicit, which debuted at number 14 on Billboard's Top 200 album chart. Kansas has sold more than 30 million albums worldwide and is famous for classic hits such as Carry On Wayward Son, Dust in the Wind, and the progressive epic Song for America. The new album will be released by Inside Out Music and features 9 all-new tracks written by the band, produced by Zach Risvey, and co-produced by Phil Ehart and Richard Williams. Kansas' signature sound is unmistakable throughout the album. The album showcases Ronnie Platt's towering vocals, David Ragsdale's searing violin, Tom Brislin's dazzling keyboards, William and Risvey's electrifying guitar riffs, Ehart's powerful drums, and Billy Greer's rockin' bass. Without further ado, let's go. Hey folks, we got Zach Risvey, Billy Greer, and Ronnie Platt from Kansas. How you fellas doing today?
How you doing, hey guys?
Folks? Doing good. Good to see you.
We really, really appreciate you guys being on the show. I understand that you have an album coming out in June. Y'all want to talk about it a little bit?
Yes.
Nah.
Somebody else start. Come on.
Somebody go first.
Okay. Well, The Absence of Presence coming out the end of next month, and we can't be more excited about it.
Yeah. Great.
That's the cut.
Great talking to you guys.
Great talking to you.
So. Wow, I expected a little bit more.
Hey, shorten to the point.
So this is the first working on this album for probably the last year. Is that when started writing? More than a year, probably, since the last album was released.
I mean, writing wise, it's been going for a while, but like we started it about last June. We went in the studio and recorded for a couple of weeks. Then we went back a month later and recorded more drum tracks. And like over the last 7 months, it's come together. You know, some people recording at home, some people in the studio. It's kind of the modern way of recording now. You know, everyone's a little bit split up, and then we get together for the really critical stuff. So it works good.
Cool. So this is the first record since 2016. Is that correct?
Correct.
That is correct. Yes.
So what got you guys thinking about doing a record now? What was the driving force?
Okay, I'll take that. Right. So
go ahead, Zach. Go ahead.
I mean, honestly, the driving force is the same one that it's been for a few years. Since I joined the band and since Ronnie became involved, which is that, you know, it's a new lineup, it's a new day. And the whole goal, I think, with me being aboard and having new guys was to actually get back to making records again. And you know, getting back to the process of making records was something that Kansas hadn't done in so long, which is a shame, you know, for a great band like that. So we're basically continuing on the same path of the Prelude Implicit, which is, you know, to make hopefully good music again and get it out there for our fans and stuff to hear.
Yeah, we went for about 16 years without recording a new studio album. The last one we recorded was in 2000 with Kerry Livgren, and actually even Dave Hope came in and played on the album. The only original member that didn't play was Robbie, who was in the hospital at the time. That's when he had his heart attack and had all his health issues. But so it had been so many years. Steve had lost the will to record, and then, you know, he retired. We got Ronnie in the band. Everybody was, you know, new and fresh and fired up, and so we did the Prelude Implicit, and then just, you know, we're inspired to do another one. We had a great record company that's behind us, Inside Out, and they're just, you know, gave us free reign, no restraints. The longer the songs, the better. So it's just the perfect situation.
That's awesome. Now, between the three of you, Billy, you've been in there longest then?
I have,
three of
yes.
You? Yes. Yeah, and you came in with what Steve Morris, wasn't it, about the time, same time?
Yeah, 1985. I'll be 30 years in July. Wow. 35 years in July, I'm sorry.
And then Ronnie, how long, Ronnie and Zach, how long have you guys been in then?
2014 for me.
14.
Yeah, I my first show was in 2017, middle 2017. Of 2017. About 3.5 years for me.
Wow.
Hard to believe. I can't believe it's been, I can't believe I've done 350 shows with these guys already. It's really hard to get my hands
on. So being the new guy, do they still haze you quite often?
Oh, yeah. No,
it's Tom now.
I thought you said, do they hate me? And I was going to say, yeah, they do.
No, hazing, Tom has that. Yeah, Tom's the one that gets hazes now. He's the newest boy.
He's the new one.
Yeah, when Tom joined, I was like, talent schmalent. You know, at least someone else is going to get it now.
That's great.
That doesn't mean we let up on Zach at all.
No, God, Lord, no.
Zach should have Everlast across his forehead. Yeah. He just keeps on taking a beating.
Yeah, I caught a show. The last time I saw you guys was actually, it was the year my son was born. It would have been 94. Actually, the end of 94, beginning of 95. I saw you out in Oklahoma City. And it was a fantastic show. I had never seen you guys before. And it was like, oh, my gosh. You know,
was that with another band or was that at Frontier City? What possibly
that was in,
you could,
it was called in Cahoots is what it was. It was a big
Yeah, I remember that.
It was like a big one of those boot scooting kind of big venues.
Big cowboy boy.
Yeah,
I sure do,
because it was a
that.
Smaller venue, but it was really cool because I was sitting real close to front. And
we call those the dark days, but that's back when we were, you know, all stuck on a bus and had to be out for 5 or 6 weeks at a time, right. And doing, you know, clubs and not right. so great venues on Tuesday through Thursday, and then do a couple good gigs on the weekend just to pay the bills and pay everybody.
Yeah, it was a midweek gig if I remember right. But I tell you what though, it was one of those things where I was just set back. I mean, no matter what it was, the quality of the show was good. It trust me, I enjoyed it very much. You know, it was one of those things I had liked you guys for many, many years and was able to see that. And I was glad to actually see it in a smaller situation like that for myself. You know, it was a more intimate type situation.
Well, if you like that, you should see us now in a performing arts center doing the shows that we're doing.
I bet it is.
40th anniversary. Yes. It's, you know, got a lot more production and it's just, you know, a 2.5 hour, almost 2.5 hour show. And God, the players in this band are just fantastic. Zach and Tom and Ronnie as well, and doing all the big high notes that you expect when you hear a Kansas show. And so the band's never sounded better to me. And I, like I said, been here for 35 years.
Awesome. That's awesome.
The new record's great. I've listened to it. They sent it to us to listen to, and I was able to listen to it yesterday and a little bit today. And it's a really good record, and it's definitely a Kansas record. You can tell the Kansas groove.
The first song.
First song, it's like, yep. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I think sometimes bands have a tendency to try to recreate something different, and that's not what you're looking for. You know, you really want, you know, you want Kansas to sound like Kansas, not Kansas to sound like, you know, somebody else. So it's good that you guys are sticking true to the formula and the music. It sounds great. It really does. New single should do pretty well too. So that's going to be great. So did everybody write together? Is that what was going on, or how did that work?
Take it, Zach.
Yeah, go ahead, Zach. Take that one.
No.
The answer is no.
No.
Oh, you guys, I miss you guys. Oh, man.
No, you don't.
A lot of the writing, it falls on me. I mean, that's really why I wound up in the band. I mean, let's be honest. You know, when I joined the band, I mean, the band really didn't need another guitar player. I think I wound up in the band because of the writing that I brought into Prelude to Placid and all that. And, it worked out that way. So the writing happens, like, while we're on the road. And it's, you go on the road and you play and then you come home and you work. So it takes a long time to get the material together. So, you know, I've been working on material for the last couple of years. And then when I start getting to the end, obviously, I don't know if you know, but I'm not a lyricist. I don't write lyrics. So at some point, I keep sending the material to everyone. And as guys come up with lyrics or ideas, you know, people will submit, you know, lyric ideas. So yeah, the writing process, it's just been going on and off for the last 2.5 years. And the reason this record took 3 years is because the writing process took 2 years. You know, so it's
plus two, you know, we were involved in this never ended. It's become the third or fourth annual 40th anniversary of the Point of No Return tour.
It never ends.
Yeah. I mean, God, we started this, 3.5 years ago in September or something like that. And it just keeps going. I mean, we thought when we started these anniversary tours, we'd play maybe 20, 30 shows and that'd be it. And then all of a sudden it took off and we had all this, you know, promoters wanting to book the band and now we're going into, like I said, almost the fourth year of the Point of No Return 40th anniversary tour, fourth annual.
So, and I know when I initially talked to Phil and he was telling me that he was talking to Keith that they originally, when they thought of doing Left Overture in its entirety, they were only going to try it in 12 or 15 markets. And that ended up, I think we did Left Overture more than 80 shows of Left Overture. And now Point of No Return has long surpassed that. I don't even know what the count is on Point of No Return. We've been playing it so long now.
Yeah. Amazing. Unbelievable.
So are you guys doing different sets then depending on the show? So you're talking about the Point of No Return and you've got the last summer were you on a double bill last summer? I know you're scheduled to be on one coming up here this summer. Did you do a double bill last year as well?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
We continued playing our theater show on our 40th anniversary show.
There were some festival shows and some casino gigs that we did, which, you know, when you do those casino gigs, which are actually, you know, good paying and pay a lot of bills, but the casinos don't want you to play 2.5 hours. They want a 75-minute set or a 90-minute set and, you know, and get the people back out gambling. So, yeah, we mixed in a few of those here and there, but you know, eventually worked our way back into the longer Performing Arts Center shows with the Point of No Return.
Yeah, because all three of us were going to, actually, we were, I just looking, I couldn't remember the date, but there was a Saturday night this summer up at Ruhoff in Noblesville, up in Indianapolis. We were going to try to catch you guys with Foreigner. And I was real excited about that show. Now, you know, who knows when that's going to happen.
Well, yeah, we were all looking forward to it. First of all, because, you know, like I said, the show, the Point of No Return show is 2 hours, 20 minutes plus whatever. And then, you know, we were going to have the middle slot in that 3-band show, which was Foreigner, Kansas, and Europe. Mm-hmm. And we had the middle slot playing an hour set starting at 8 o'clock and off at 9 o'clock. So that was going to be, you know, like a walk in the park for us for, you know, to play that kind of show. Wham, bam, and see you a bit later.
So has that been postponed or canceled yet? Or is it still, we're just still waiting to hear about it?
You know, I think they're moving stuff further and further back as days go by. I mean, we have I don't know if everything's been canceled yet. Honestly, I don't know. I don't want to say that without knowing for sure. But the further we get into the pandemic and everything, the more shows get pushed back and, you know, later on in the year or even into next year. So, you know, just have to wait and see.
Yeah, some of the people I've seen already are just saying, like, what, just keep the same month, but we're just going to go a year later. You know, I saw some shows like that. You know, it's like doing, well, 2021 instead of 2020, you know.
Yeah.
So Zach, when he asked that question, you kind of got a laugh there.
Me?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't laughing at it. Sometimes I just think funny things.
Squirrel.
go ahead, Zach.
No, sorry. I didn't mean to bust it up. Go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, you know, speaking of the shows getting postponed and everything because of the pandemic, what are you guys doing to stay sane during the quarantine?
Well, me personally, you know, after the record got done, what was that?
That was a glass of Merlot.
That's a good way to do it. It's a good way to handle it.
I quit drinking for four months and I lost 50 pounds. That's what I've been doing, riding the bicycle a lot.
Wow.
And now I've started back again. So there you go.
You lost how much?
Well, 50 pounds.
50. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations, man.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I found them.
By the time we get back to playing, I may not have, I may have found them again, but at least right now.
Well, if that summer tour happens, just imagine you're going to lose a little bit more because it's going to be hotter than hell out there.
God, I hope so. I really do.
Yep.
But I don't know. For me, it's just, I'm trying to work more on some music, some lyrics and stuff with a friend of mine, songwriting. And I know these guys, Zach's been working. Well, you tell them, Zach, what you've been doing.
Oh, well, I mean, not much. I mean, I'm kind of in the middle of doing maintenance on my studio. It's been so in use for the last couple of years. So I'm kind of tearing it apart and putting it back together again. A little bit of that. I was involved with some of the post-production on the record, 5.1 mixes and things like that. So I've been keeping busy. But I'm about to run out of stuff to do, so anything can happen.
And it looks like Ronnie's been real busy hanging his basses and guitars on the wall.
Yeah, little construction.
As a bassist, I just want to say I respect that wall.
That's a nice wall back there.
It looks good. It looks really good. Man, I'm jealous. You got two guitars there.
Most people's walk-in closets are bigger than my music room. Trust me. I have everything jam-packed. Well, I have four keyboards in here, six guitars, recording stuff all over the place.
God, I thought I was looking at Sam Ash for a second.
Right. Right. Taking the job. And the doors are closed.
Yeah.
Taking a job at the music store.
No kidding. Yeah, you can't even do that now. That's what's sad. You just got to deal with what you got. Actually, they opened up our music store here in town. He's back to, I think he's doing a small opening now where you can actually go back in and get some strings and stuff like that if you need it.
So. Oh, cool.
So what do you guys play? I mean, what Dennis usually asks this question, but I'll ask it. Sure. So what do you use for gear and what do you like to play?
Somebody else go. Ronnie, what do you think?
I'm just still using my Motif, my Hammond organ, and screaming in whatever mic they give me at the top of my lungs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
For me, when Ronnie joined the band about 6 years ago, I got back a bass that I sold back in the early 80s, right after my stint with Streets. I had a Fender Jazz bass, a 64 Jazz, and I had to sell it after the band broke up. And I got it back, sold it for $500, bought it back for $3,500 plus one of my other basses. So.
Wow.
But the bass you were using before that, wasn't that the one that weighed like 30 pounds? It was like a coffee table on your shoulder?
It was, exactly. It's, friend of mine in Savannah made me a custom bass out of African zebra wood, which is probably some of the densest, hardest, heaviest wood I've ever seen in my life. And I had to have back surgery after that bass.
I thought it was made out of cedar block.
I'm not kidding. I had back surgery. But anyway, wow. But I bought this, my old Fender back, and it weighs just 10 pounds maybe, and that's what I use. Years ago, when we started using in-ear monitors, we basically got rid of our stage amplifiers, all of our backline gear. Richard's the only one that has one small cabinet or a couple of small cabinets pointing up from this floor and him as himself. But we're going direct and just using, in-ears, and depending on Chad Singer, our front of house guy, is really good. And he's been with us for years and years. And we trust him, and I'm using a DI and just a pedal board. And so, Zach, the same thing. What is your rig, Zach?
It's just real. Nowadays, fractal. It's amazing. Yeah, fractal. Yeah, the days of, Marshall stacks and stuff, you can get away with this little box that I have on stage. you know, it emulates every kind of amp. It's got every kind of effect in it. I can set up presets, and I just use these stock Stratocasters that you can just buy right off the shelf, you know, and it's a real simple setup. It keeps things really simple. And the fractal stuff, the guitar fractal stuff sounds amazing. They make amazing gear. Rich Williams is the person who turned me on to that gear. They make great stuff.
I work with a lot of local bands, and they still drag in those Marshall half stacks and Kemper this and Ampeg that. And it's like, come on, man, you're playing in a bar. Come on. These professional musicians are touring with you know, amp sims. It's time for you guys. Oh, it's not pure. I didn't fuck off with that not pure shit.
Well, it's not even the pure part. It's the fact that if you're in a club and you have an amp like that, you're going to be louder than the PA. And your band is going to wind up sounding like crap, you know.
Why can't we hear the singer is the question that I get the most with one band that I work with. Why can't we hear the singer?
Because that's the singer. Right there.
the singer just needs to bring his own Marshall amp and plug into it.
Exactly. That's funny.
That's why inner monitors are the best invention to come into the music industry. Because it's changed the game in ear monitors, as opposed to floor monitors and competing with on-stage amplifiers. And Billy, you had an old Ampeg back in the day, right?
Oh, yeah. I had the SVT and the rack mount SVT model and the 810 cabinet.
The 810 cabinet, yeah.
That's classic amp, man. That's probably the best rig in the world is the old Ampeg.
I've helped carry a bunch of those, and they're heavy as hell. It's like, how can you make something that small and be that heavy? You know, it's
that probably contributed to my back surgery. I guarantee as well.
That Ampeg is also made out of African zebra wood.
Right. If anybody wants to know what it's like to carry that bass bottom around, just drag your refrigerator up and down your driveway a few times. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, it's a mess. But, it is a different game now. But for a band, especially for you, like you guys, I bet it has made a difference compared to what it was years ago. With all the instruments you have and everything going on, that helps you guys play a lot better, I'm sure, just to be able to hear, you know, and being able to, and they could just dial it in where it's almost perfect.
Yeah, it was a learning curve at first, getting used to them, because we'd never used in-ear monitors and we always had to compete with the wall of sound coming off the stage from, you know, stacks of amplifiers and drums and stuff. And now the only sound we have from the stage is Phil's drums, basically. And, you know, got everything in our own mix, digital board, so we can travel around the world to, you know, to wherever and take a thumb drive with it and pull up the same mix. Yeah, in theory.
In theory.
That theory hasn't proved exactly accurate a few times. So.
Well, you know, that's the same with my mixer. You know, you work with the band, you've got a basic mix down, you've got their setup, you know, just a little bit of tweaking, and you're ready to go real fast.
Yeah. Unless your sound or your monitor guy gives you the wrong belt pack before the show starts.
That's never happened.
That happened with Tom's first gig with us. We did the Rock Legends, Cruise. Yeah. And our first gig, we were handed out the wrong belt packs, and it was an interesting first song that we did.
Billy, didn't you have my pack?
I did.
So Billy had my pack, and I can't hear myself, and I'm yelling to Derek, our monitor man, turn me up, and he's turning me up, and causing Billy's ears to
smoke,
bleed.
Got smoke coming off his out of his ears.
Oh my god. Live and learn.
It was horrible. Yeah,
that is funny.
I just want to say that my mix was perfect that day. I didn't have any problems at all. Thank you.
So we know who mixed the packs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, $20 is $20, you know.
Exactly.
That's great.
Back to the new album. Yes.
Yeah, no,
The Absence of Presence. When Phil came, brought that title to the band, that describes Christmas morning at my house when I was a kid, you know, The Absence of Presence.
Amen, brother.
Yeah. They said, no, it doesn't mean that. Oh, okay. Well, it applies beautifully right now, the times we're living in. Doesn't it now? The absence of presence.
Right. Wherever you go, there's an absence of presence. We are not psychic by any means.
Yeah. Complete accident that that happened. That title's been around for 2 years at least, and it's a weird coincidence.
Timing is everything.
But I, on behalf of the band and myself, at least, this is a really good album. And I didn't have much to do with writing the lyrics or the music, but I did play on it. And I just think it's a great album. There's some of the songs are so much fun to play. And there's, like you said, they have so many Kansas threads through them that you can tell it's Kansas, but it's you know, it's aged. And it's given everybody, especially the newer guys in the band, a chance to shine and add their two cents and
a product of the musical genius of Mr. Zach Risby.
Oh, yes. Come on.
The God genius sake. That is
the genius.
Ronnie, me too. I'll bend you that money later.
$20, right? $20. Okay. So, no, I love this. I love this album too. It's just there's something about this album that just hits me. It's got a theme to it that just the songs and there's a lot of variety. I know we released Throwing Mountains first and it's so heavy and I've had so many people come back to me and message me on Facebook and stuff. Ronnie, this is like progressive metal. This sounds so metal to me, but yet the song is still very dynamic, but it's going to be very interesting to see. I know we're releasing, is it Memories Down the Line? We're going to release very soon.
Oh yeah! Wow, cool.
I don't know. That's news to me.
They heard it here first.
I heard it right here. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're going to have another pre-album release song.
Cool.
Memories Down the Line. Don't hold me to it, but I think that's what I heard. Awesome. So and that's very dynamically different from Throwing Mountains. It's more of a ballad type, very sincere type of formatted song. So it's really going to...
Oh, I thought that was mine.
Hello? Who is it? Your pizza's ready.
I'm going to say, it sounds just like my ringer. I'm like, look at my phone. I thought I turned that off.
Got to go, guys. See you.
It's been a pleasure. So, but this song is very different from Throwing Mountains, and it just it gives another example of just how diverse this album is. And Zach, didn't Tom write Memories Down the Line?
Yeah. And you're right. It's when you hear this, when you hear the difference between these two tracks, I mean, they are just diametrically different. So.
Very different, but no matter what you listen to on the album, there's no mistaking that it's Kansas.
Oh yeah.
There's even though there's such a different in maybe the genre of type of song, there's no mistaking that it's Kansas. And you know, I've always said this, you know, myself and Zach, if I could speak for you, Zach, I think Zach and I have been just so influenced by Kansas our entire lives, just been Kansas fans our entire lives, that when we write a song for Kansas, even though we don't have the mindset of, oh, we have to write a Kansas song, you know, think Kansas. I don't think I really do that in my lyrical writing, because we've been so influenced by the band that there, no matter what we write, there's going to be elements of Kansas in our writing. It just comes out naturally because you're a product of your influences.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, writing for the band, like, interviewers have asked me, you know, did you have to do research? I was like, research? I've been doing research for 35 years, you know.
Right.
There's nothing to go find out. I mean, I know all those great classic albums and songs, they're like in my blood, you know. So, you know, in the past, in other bands, I've kind of had to stop myself from writing like Kansas, literally in certain instances, because it's just so like ingrained in me. So, yeah, so getting to write for this band, it's like, you know, I can just kind of do what comes natural. And it hopefully works.
One thing I liked, I was listening to the record today. I was listening through it, and you know, like I said, it has that classic. You know, as soon as it comes on, you hear it. But then it's got this. I like the heavier guitars in some of that songs too, and it reminds me of when you had "Fight Fire with Fire" came out. You know, that was a different take. You know, that was different for Kansas when it first came out. You're like, well, man, that, you know, there's like those driving guitar, you know, kind of chunky guitar, and you're like, that's Kansas. You know, and this has a little bit, it sounds a little bit like that. Plus you got, you know, you've got all the influences of the older stuff too. And I liked it. I think it's a great record.
One of the things that Zach said earlier when he joined the band during the Prelude Implicit, that Kansas wasn't looking for another guitar player. Well, the benefit of having Zach in the band now is in having two guitar players, there's really nothing from the Kansas library that we can't play. When you hear, you know, even in the older songs where you hear those overlapping guitar parts, sure, they're there now. And even when there aren't two guitars, where there's not two guitars playing off each other, Zach is playing a harmony to David Ragsdale's violin and just adding so much texture. I mean, Dust in the Wind, Zach is putting that capo. You're putting that capo way high up on that electric and playing that high. Oh my God. It's like heaven in my ears on stage to hear Rich's guitar. Billy plays acoustic on that Billy. And then Zach is playing that high part. It just adds a texture that is just so sweet. So having that extra guitar player is such a plus, and it enables us to play anything from the library and really emulate the studio recordings, but also have that live element, which is really great.
Right. Yeah. It just adds another dynamic.
It's true. Yeah. And in the last 4 years since I've been in the band, you know, as a fan, as someone who's been a fan forever, you know, I can't believe the songs we played. I mean, Ronnie, right? I mean, like, we've done Journey from Maribyrnd and Lamplight.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Giant anthem. I mean, it's an endless list. I can't, you know, I couldn't imagine going to a show. I saw 50 Kansas shows before I joined the band, and I some of these songs would have been amazing to see live. So it's great that we have those little extra muscles that we can stretch now and do anything. And the last 4 years have shown that, you know, anything's possible.
That's awesome.
Do you guys each have a favorite song on the record? Is there one that stands out for you?
For
me, it's Throwing Mountains, the first release. I love that riff. That's so much fun. So, I mean, it just kicks your ass when you play it. And plus, you know, it's dynamic as well. It's got some difficult parts and goes off to left field and beyond.
And I believe that to annoy you, Billy.
Yeah, I know. And then comes back again. But that's my favorite song. But there's, you know, it's like, who's your favorite child? You know, that's like one of those. I have two or three favorite songs on this album.
Sure.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, your dog's joined the group. I see there, Alan.
I have got three little white Bichons.
Oh, look at that guy. Oh,
man. Oh, jeez.
They always make themselves known at some point. So either by sound
my wife decided, well, while you're doing this interview, I'm going to go to my mom's house. Well, thanks now, because the dogs are going to come in here and pester me the whole time, and they have not disappointed. But I've got three Bichons and a Puggle, and the Puggle, he's the one that had to just make himself known.
Oh, man, that's great.
So where are you all located? I mean, do you guys live close enough where you can get together and do stuff? Or are you guys where you have to fly in? Whenever you got a gig, you're coming in from all different directions and everything.
We all live together in the same house. Like right now, we're all
like the monkeys, right?
We just can't just can't stand each other, so we're in different rooms.
Yeah, we're in different rooms.
Yeah, you got one little cart you ride around in, like.
Yeah, Billy's walking to you, Zach. Just so you know.
I'm gonna punch you right in the face.
But we've talked to quite a few bands here lately, and you know they're all. It is one of those things where they don't see each other till gig time, you know, and then they all flying in from different directions.
Well, here's where I am.
Right now. That looks horrible.
And you can't. What a place to be quarantined. Yeah.
How beautiful. See the moon coming up over the horizon there?
How beautiful.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah.
Something tells me you're not in Kansas.
I am not in Kansas.
I tell you what, a glass of wine in that view, quarantine would be real easy for me.
Life's tough, but anyway. That's I digress. Awesome. I'm walking back to my
so when you're
and Zach is in beautiful Jersey and I'm in beautiful Chicago.
Indeed.
Oh, yeah, so we're kind of spread out. Yeah.
You're about 6 hours north of us, Ronnie. Because Dennis and I both live in Evansville, Indiana. And he lives in the next city over.
Oh, okay. And
Bill's live in Columbus.
Yeah, I live just south of Indianapolis.
Isn't Evansville where we played that outdoor show on the street? You guys remember that gig that it closed off the streets and there was like a traffic light in front of us a couple of years ago?
Oh, no. That was farther north in
Terre Haute, maybe?
Maybe. Sorry, yeah. I guess not. I don't remember why.
No, Evansville's... Evansville's not cool enough to do shit like that. That's a problem. unless you're a country band, it ain't gonna happen. We have to travel to go to Nashville to see rock shows. If that tells you anything, or we have to go to Indianapolis or St. Louis or Louisville. We're about 2 hours from each of those places, so we can go. Cool. Indy's about 3 hours, so we have to travel to go see anything around here. Our town sucks, but they just don't. It's terrible.
It's kind of funny because at one point in time, it was the Mecca back in the 80s. Every band came through. Every band played there. And in the last, 15 years, 20 years or whatever, if it's not a country band, they're not putting butts in the seats.
No. I thought we played Evansville.
You probably played Robert. You guys played here, I believe – 2 years ago at Old National or Victory Theater.
That would be the second annual Point of No Return, $40.
Yeah.
Revisited.
About 4 or 5 years ago, Billy, I think you were the only one that might have been in the band at the time. You played the Ford Center. I think Kansas was doing something in conjunction with some wrestling that was coming through or something. Does that sound right?
No, he's like, no.
There was something that come through town that Kansas got booked like 2 weeks before at the Ford Center. And that was the first time I'd gotten to see you guys. And it was real exciting for me because, I mean, it was right up close. Didn't have to fight 100 million people to come see
you. How many years ago was this?
Oh, 5 or 6 years ago.
So was Steve still singing in the band? Oh, he was. Yes. Okay. So it's been at least 6 years then, right, Ron?
Yeah, because I'm very quickly coming up on my six-year anniversary.
Yeah, September will be 6 years for Ronnie.
So heck, it might have been 8 years ago because it seems like it was a couple of years before he left the band when y'all had been here.
Okay.
Nonetheless, it was a fantastic show.
Great.
Well, I had not had the opportunity and had planned to go this summer with Foreigner.
Yeah,
so
we were all.
Hopefully, we'll keep our fingers crossed that ends up happening.
Would be nice.
We'll
see.
The band was playing with like a wrestling show or something. Billy, did you have your wrestling tights with you?
I'll see you.
I think it had to do with the promoter. The band wasn't touring with the wrestling people, but the promoter that was promoting the wrestling thing was also promoting Kansas. I don't remember what the deal was, but it was just some weird thing. The radio station was like, "Man, we got these tickets, and you're coming to the show."
That's what happened back in the '90s. When I was telling you about the dark days, it was like Puppet Show and Kansas. At
the, at Spinal the, Tap.
at the Jubilee Bar and Grill in Hoboken, you know, Pennsylvania or something.
Isn't it amazing though? I mean, we've talked about this before with other artists on the show. It's just amazing that, you know, it's been this long. I mean, Kansas has been around since 1970. Isn't that when it started? Well, roughly, right? 73, 74?
72.
Okay, 72.
73 is when the original lineup got together before they recorded their album and released the first album in 74.
Yeah, and so here you are today, still touring as a band, different people, you know, and you know, that's amazing. And we've talked about it on the show before is, you know, I have a son that's 21, and we had a conversation the other day, and I said, ask him, is there anybody you're listening to now that you will listen to in 10 years? 10 years. And he goes, probably not.
Right.
And I said, well, the good thing is I filled your cell phone. I mean, I filled your iPhone with the right music.
Good for you, man.
Because it's bands that have been around since 1970, whatever.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Thank you very much. Hey, we've gotten, God, I don't know how many generations of new fans from so many different sources, parents that, you know, they're raised their kids listening to Kansas music, TV shows that have used Supernatural, for instance, use Carry On Wayward Son as like their unofficial theme song. Right. So we established a relationship with those people. I mean, just so many different things have turned different people, younger people, onto Kansas music. Movies that have used songs and soundtracks and stuff like that.
And now the kids are bringing their kids.
Right.
Yeah.
There's grandkids coming to the show now.
Well, it's funny you say that, Ronnie, because I texted my dad. My dad is 73. And I texted my dad right before we got on and I said, we are interviewing Kansas tonight. And he's texting me back and he goes, you are calling me when this is over.
That's great.
He should have joined in the conversation.
You don't want that to happen.
No. Had him on before. I love him to death, but it's funny.
Great guy, but that dude's he's a riot. He still surfs and crap like that. He's out there.
Good for him,
73 and he's surfing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Surf's up here right now.
Yeah, and he lives in North Florida. Like I said, dude, it's not surfing, Dad. There's like the waves. I mean, I can get bigger waves in the shower.
we're in North Florida. Does your dad
Jacksonville
live? Well, that's where I'm in Ponte Vedra, just south of Jacksonville.
Oh, I actually have family in Ponte Vedra.
Well, there you go, man. Yeah.
There you go.
Billy, did you wax your board this morning?
Yeah.
That's kind of a personal question, Ron.
You know, though.
Well, you know, I was going to say something about that when Bill said something about making waves in his shower.
Okay, keep it clean. Keep it clean.
All right.
But, you know, though, I mean, right now, you know, the state of the music, you know, right now, what's coming out and the mute, you know, there's nothing on the radio I even want to hear. So, you know, when you guys are putting out stuff, you know, when, like what's coming out here next month in June, you know, you're putting out damn good quality music, you know, and it sounds great. And it's not hard for people. I mean, people are they're thirsty for good music because there's not a whole lot of it out there right now.
Thank you. I don't know if Zach and Billy know this. Do you know the... don't fall off your chairs, but do you know that Throwing Mountains has actually gotten some airplay?
Is that right? Yeah. A friend of mine from Minnesota, you know, sent me when Throwing Mountains was playing on the radio, and he took a short film strip of it. And texted it to me.
Well, that's great. Yeah. That's great. Because
it's going to be played on my radio show as well.
Yeah.
Cool. Wow. Great. It's great to hear.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's like I said, there's just right now, it's just for me, especially, there's just such a lull in the music industry right now. And what's out there, there's just nothing that interests me. So, well, you know, to hear something like this coming out that's new, it's like, oh, thank goodness, you know.
thank goodness for us, because, you know, we just didn't have many songs to choose from.
We only had
15 albums worth of material to choose from for ourselves.
That's why I say I could never make the set list, because our show would be 6 hours long.
Me too.
Hey, at least you're doing a 2.5 hour show. That's great, because for the Leftoverture song, you know, tour and stuff like that, because there are bands that are still out there and they're going out and they're doing an hour and 15 minutes and walking off, and it's like, there's a lot more material out there. Please play a little longer.
We're just warmed up at an hour.
We haven't even started playing the Point of No Return set at an hour and 15 minutes. So we're doing an acoustic set, and then we're doing a set of the old, you know, deep tracks and fan favorites and stuff like that. Then we do the point show, and it, you know, from start to finish in its entirety. So it's a well-designed show. And then a big encore, of course, we do Carry On Wayward Son for the encore. Right.
And Billy, you're not supposed to give that away, man.
No.
Now they're gonna know.
We'd have never thought that.
For those of us who have seen Kansas, we may have already known that.
But I tell you what, dude, I do like that idea too. When people play those, when you play your albums in an entirety, I think that's just freaking fantastic. I was able to see Styx do that here a few years ago. And yeah. I was like, just to hear an album, because that's, you know, when you kids don't know that now, because they listen to songs, you know, they just pull a song off of Spotify or pull songs off iTunes, and they don't remember, you know, sitting down, getting the album out, putting it on the record player, listening to it till it hit the center, you know, flipping it and doing it again. I mean, that's what you did. I mean,
and then flipping it and flipping it and flipping it until you had to replace your stylus.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you had all the words memorized from every song, because they were on the liner notes.
And you sit there and you read the liner notes.
But
just to hear an album, like to hear a band play it like it is on the album, it's just, I think it's just fantastic. That's one of the, I think it's really cool.
So. Zach, it's funny you mentioned that about the Carry On My Wayward Son being the encore song or whatever. I went, and my sons took me for Father's Day to see a band called Walk the Moon, which is a band that I kind of like them. They're a younger band or whatever. And they have like one really big hit, which is the song that I really like. They played it at like, it was like the sixth song into their set. They were the headliners. And I was like, and the place emptied. I mean, they were down. Like, they just played their hit. And we stuck around for one more song, and there were just droves of people leaving. I'm like, why on earth would you do that?
The truth is that on the Leftoverture anniversary show, because of Leftoverture being programmed the way it is, Carry On actually wound up in the middle of the show, because we would do the acoustic set, the deep cut set, and then Leftoverture in its entirety. So probably for the first time in the history of the band, Carry On was coming up in the middle, and I remember I was like, is that gonna work? Is that gonna go over here? That's weird. But it worked. So Carry On actually has been in the middle of the show, which is why it's out of necessity. But it is the quintessential closer for sure.
Yeah, there's some things you just expect.
Exactly.
That only goes to show the hardcore Kansas fan that comes sees us, because when we did Leftoverture, and we were starting the Leftoverture segment of the show with Carry On Wayward Son, I never saw anyone leave from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And you have that age group when that album came out, when you did listen to the entire album, and on Leftoverture, there's not a Leftoverture or Point of No Return, in my opinion, there's not a bad song on either one of those albums. I played the death out of all those songs, not just Wayward Son.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and you know, there are those diehard fans that if you would have put that at the end, you would have gotten Facebook message or an email or something that said,
you didn't play it to the end.
Right. It would have been wound up.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I'm glad we did it the way we did.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I like that, keeping it to the, you know, being authentic. I mean, I think that's really cool and important.
Yeah. Leftoverture. Two for the show.
Yeah, I got to find mine. My two for the show is no longer, doesn't exist anymore. I think I must have done something with it.
I got some more, and I just grabbed the first three I could grab.
For me, two for the show, Steve Walsh at his pinnacle.
Yeah.
He was just phenomenal on that live record, and every time I listen to it, he just inspires me all over again.
Yeah, It's a great live album. It really is.
That was out. When did that come out? That was what year? That
would have been 78, I think.
Yeah.
78 or 79.
78.
Okay.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's a great album.
So is the new record coming out on vinyl?
Yes.
Yes. As a matter of fact, in a couple of colors, right? Isn't it? I saw that it's like a seafoam green color. And
cool.
Isn't the vinyl coming out in different colors? It's really strange.
I think it is. That's pretty popular
right now.
Yeah. And it's also, the album's also coming out in 5.1 surround sound as well. So there's going to be a few different versions. Yeah.
Cool.
I guess I'm going to have to go buy me a surround sound system now.
Yeah, exactly.
I have one. I'll sell you. Right.
I got out of that a long time ago. I used to have that all set up, and then when we moved, I just like, yeah.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear what Bill said.
I didn't hear it.
I'll make you a real good deal. It's a Denon set. It's really nice.
Oh.
So, Mr. Risby, let me ask you, how is it different producing something for 5.1 surround sound?
I wasn't leading the charge on that. Jeff Glicksman, former.
Oh, Jeff was doing that. Okay.
He did the 5.1 mixes. So I was sort of, you know, with coronavirus and stuff going on, his studio was closed. His assistant actually had coronavirus. So I sort of became a remote helper for a couple of weeks. And I was doing all the prep work for him on the surround sessions. But basically the idea is, you know, you have two speakers when you listen in stereo, and when you're in surround, you have six. You have five spread all around you. And the idea is to take the music and create this landscape that you kind of sit in the middle, and the music kind of happens all around you. So I've only heard bits of what Jeff did, and what I heard sounded really good. But I'm waiting for the final product. I'm going to get to hear it for the first time myself when it comes out.
If those are mixed, I'm sure it's mixed right. But if those mixed right in 5.1, the records sound incredible. I mean,
it feels like
you're sitting in the middle of.
I'm cool.
A live show when it's happening. It's really amazing. The way it bounces off and stuff like that.
So I guess you're taking like whatever the stage is set up. If you've got a guitar player on the left, it's probably in the left speaker more to the left. Singer's probably center, just kind of doing it that way is, I guess I'm taking it.
Well, what it is, there's two approaches to surround sound. One is the sort of realistic approach where you mix it like the listener feels like they're sitting about 15 rows back in a hall and the audience is on stage and you can hear the audience around you and you get that sense, but it's realism. And then there's the other kind of surround mixing where it's like a free-for-all where you can take guitars and pan them in the rear speakers and, you know, like there's a famous story about them remixing Goodbye Yellow Brick Road for surround sound, and the guitars at the beginning of Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting are quadruple. So they took one and stuck them in each speaker, and that must sound amazing, you know. So there are all kinds of new possibilities for panning things around, and you can have a lot of fun with it. It's you know, it's kind of a uncharted waters. There hasn't really been that much surround music as compared to stereo. So there's a, you know, it's kind of the Wild West. You kind of do whatever you want with it, and different people have adopted these different practices. But it's sort of the real versus the super heightened and surreal, you know. And they're both a lot of fun in their own ways.
But that's what I've been telling everyone with this, with the absence of presence. Get yourself a good pair of earbuds, a good pair of headphones, and listen to this album. Isolate yourself and listen to this album, because there's so many overlaying parts. And yeah, I keep on wanting to mention Jets Overhead, because Rags' violin in that song just I absolutely love it. And I played Jets Overhead just to listen to Rags.
Yeah, killer solo. Guy's a maniac, and he's a really good violin player.
So are you going to be, I'm sure this will be out in all the stores and anything, but can you buy it directly from you guys whenever it's come to, or pre-order the album?
Pre-orders are up now.
Are they? Okay.
Yeah.
I want to definitely get vinyl on that.
So. Release date is June 26th.
I'll have to go pre-order.
I think, tonight. I'm not sure, it hadn't been that long ago, but you can pre-order the album now. So,
okay.
Yeah.
I'll be doing that today.
Been waiting on Zach to finish these mixes. Always waiting for Zach.
Just been sitting on the couch, you know, eating bonbons. Yeah.
Still the new guy. Well, newer guy. This is where the hazing part comes in again.
That's awesome. Well, I'm literally looking forward to it, and I really wish the hell things would have went normal this summer, because I was really looking forward to July to seeing you guys play. I was like, man, this is gonna be awesome to see it.
This is going to be, just to you know, use the platform to whine a little bit, this is going to be an awesome year for us. We had 95 shows booked and under contract. Wow. Including, you know, the about a 50 some plus tour with Foreigner and Europe, and going to Europe for a month as well.
Wow.
And so that's all in question now. And it just sucks that it worked out this way, because I was really looking forward to not only, you know, being able to finish off and the Point and Overturn 40th tour finally.
45th tour.
Yeah, but also to get out and go play these sheds with Foreigner in Europe. We haven't done that in a while. We've been in performing arts centers, so to get to play for, you know, the larger crowds and the, you know, and the bigger amphitheaters was going to be a real treat for us as well.
And to have a new song for the support.
Yeah. And to play a song off the new album.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's a great bill. That triple bill was a really good
really
bill.
It really was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Too bad.
I still have a tape loop of the Final Countdown in my head, even though we didn't even tour with them. So.
Bet they play that last.
Yeah.
I think everyone has a tape loop of that in their head.
I think they do. Sometimes, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. And Geico too didn't help that at all.
You know, it's interesting though you say Geico, because they've done some. They've really kind of given the, you know, 80s metal rock groups some love. I mean, Rat is now the Rat's getting it now.
On.
Well,
we got a problem with Rat this week.
Stephen Piercy, right?
Stephen Piercy's getting it. I don't know about Rat, but Stephen Piercy's getting it, because.
Oh, we'll be in Ronnie 2 hours. It's going to be unbelievable.
Yeah. Yes, Geico, are you listening? Zach,
there you go.
Geico commercial.
We'll make sure we tag Geico whenever we post this.
That is funny, though. It is funny how this is starting to, you know, everything, you know, starts getting on TV like that and everything.
Instead of throwing mountains, it'll be throwing gecko.
Yeah. Got it. Throwing insurance prices out the window.
Right.
That's awesome.
Gentlemen, I appreciate you guys taking some time.
All right. Finally, somebody has the nerve to pull the plug on this thing.
Well, I'm the guy that doesn't like to interrupt.
Okay, Alan.
We usually keep them at an hour anyway, so it's worked out perfect, actually. So.
All right. Yeah, so hang tight for a second. I'll take us out of here. Folks, don't forget, visit us on 80sofrock.com and check out our social media. And until next time, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.